Welcome to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. You know, from time to time on American Variety, we have a thing that I call genderology that is basically looking at some aspect of the relationships between men and women. And we're not talking here about, you know, Dr. Laura or one of those, relationship shows as such, but more from a scientific standpoint. And, you know, so typically my guest will be a woman or two women and, you know, and then me talking and we'll just talk about some aspect of that. How do men and women communicate, for example, is what would be one type of topic and things like that. So my show today is one such show in the genderology series, and it's called Happy Wife, Happy Life. And I'll tell you why in a minute. My guest is Dr. Deborah Carr, who's a sociology professor and department chair at Rutgers University in New Jersey. One area of her research focuses on how work and family experiences over the course of a life affect men's and women's psychological well-being. And Dr. Carr was recently lead author of a study titled Happy Marriage, Happy Life, Marital Quality and Subjective Well-Being in Later Life, which sounds like an academic study, but it is on a topic that that we'll all recognize as we get into it. Can I call you Debbie?
Absolutely.
That's good. I'll ask Debbie to talk about the study in more detail, but in essence, their findings were that a person's marital satisfaction is a big contributor to their overall life satisfaction, as well as their feeling of well-being at the time of the survey, right? So this turns out to be true for both men and women, but here's the catch. For men, their satisfaction with their life is higher when their wife says she's happily married, and it's lower when she doesn't, seemingly proving the common observation, happy wife, happy life. And the finding for men held true even if the man doesn't feel happily married. So it's kind of a one-way street there. And this study was widely reported on the internet and provoked a lot of interest and comments, as you might imagine, from readers of articles about the study. So I guess I'll start just by asking you, Debbie, to kind of summarize the key findings of the study.
Sure. Well, sociologists have known for a long time that being happy with one's own marriage is linked to one's own mental health. If we're happy in marriage, we're happy in life. But my co-authors and I recognize that those studies had a big gap in them. We know that husbands and wives often view their marriages in very different ways. And in fact, husbands and wife marital assessments match only about 50% of the time. So we thought it would be interesting to look at the intersection of both what husbands and wives say about the marriage and how those combined assessments affect each partner's psychological well-being. And what we found is exactly what you just summarized, that if we are happy in our marriage, we are happy in our life. But our partner's happiness in the marriage affects our happiness in very complex ways. As you said, a man might not be that happy in his marriage, but if the wife reports that she's happy in that relationship, that bolsters the man's overall happiness. So in the paper, we were surprised to find that, but we set about finding reasons to explain why we have this one-sided set of findings.
So when men aren't happily married, when their wives report low marital happiness, the men's overall satisfaction with their life was very low. But in the same general cohort of men of, you know, similar description in a way, men who weren't happily married themselves reported high life satisfaction if their wives were happy with the marriage. And something about that doesn't make sense to me anyway. How could a woman feel happily married for, let's say, decades if her husband does not feel happily married? That's an odd thing. There must be more to it.
There is. There always is. And as we mentioned earlier, if you ask a husband and a wife in the same marriage, even a marriage that's gone on for 40 years, to rate how happy you are in this marriage on a scale from 1 to 5, the correlation is only about 0.5, which means they answer the same thing about half the time, which suggests that men and women rate their marriages in very different ways. And we delved into this to figure out why it is that a man who really isn't happy in his marriage still could have overall life happiness if his wife thought the marriage was top-notch. And we think part of the explanation is not sexism, it's not that men or women are better than each other, but it has to do with how people act in a marriage when they're happy or not. So traditionally, for older adults, that generation that was raised in traditional ways, if a wife was happy in her marriage, one way that she might show this is by providing her husband with support and with good care and maybe even more frequent sex. So if a woman is happier in the relationship, she might behave in a way that makes the man overall life better. Maybe it doesn't change his view of the marriage per se. Maybe it doesn't change his level of love for his wife, but he gains these other benefits that might enhance his happiness in other ways.
Yeah, I'm wondering, you know, several possibilities occur to me kind of around what you just said, Debbie. Is it possible that marriage in general is more important to women than to men, so that whether the man is happy about being married or not doesn't really influence the way the woman feels in general in the same way that it would if the woman weren't happy in her marriage, if you follow what I was trying to say?
I think there's some truth to that. And there's a fair amount of research that supports that, especially for the generations of adults who are in their 60s, 70s, and 80s today. This was a generation whereby men tended to have full employment. They would work their whole lives. And so at age 65 or even 70, even after they retired, their workplace accomplishments that they had earlier in life, maybe some of their hobbies, might factor into their overall happiness levels. So we know that most women have worked at some point in their lives, but on average, for women of this generation, they have derived less of their overall identity from their workplace accomplishments, perhaps due to things like sexism and blocked access to the gold ring in the workplace, and they've derived more of their meaning in life and happiness from things like marital relationships and parenting relationships. These things absorb most of their time, maybe not by choice, maybe due to discrimination in the labor market, but be that as it may, marriage and children are a major contributor to the happiness of women, especially in these older generations.
Some other things, too, that I thought I would throw out at you. Is it possible that men compartmentalize more so that the man might be dissatisfied with a marriage, but will just deal with it and act content while finding other sources of satisfaction, whether they be work, as you just mentioned, or hobbies or male friends or, you know, sometimes even other women, that they basically just wall off those parts of their lives and just deal with what's unpleasant and compensate by finding pleasant things, whereas women have more trouble maybe compartmentalizing? Would that be valid, do you think?
I think that might be part of it. And it's not necessarily a skill in compartmentalizing, but it's easier to bracket off those things that do absorb less of your actual time and your emotional energy. And given that for this generation, women were raised to believe, true or false, that the quality of the marriage and the quality of your children's outcome hinged on them. And so for women, you know, the quality of the relationships may be more important and all-encompassing. And so as a result, it's harder to be compartmentalized. For men, again, if they were working 9 to 5 and spent less time contributing to the home front and to the marriage and to the children, it might be less important in their hierarchy of things that are important to them. And thus, it might be easier for them to bracket it or be compartmentalized so that it factors less largely into their overall happiness.
So like all things about the human animal, when you're talking about people as opposed to talking about machines, it's complicated. There's no one statement that you can make that covers everything. No one size fits all by any means or even close to it, right? So, I mean, I was wondering, too, kind of the third, if that's what it was, the third thing I wanted to ask you about as far as it's impacting the results you found in your study, could it be a function of the general personalities of the women involved? That is, if a woman is basically just positive and cheery no matter what, maybe they at least don't fight as a couple, and maybe she doesn't nag him, and maybe he's allowed to be more distant and detached from the relationship without suffering the repercussions he might suffer from that kind of behavior with another wife. Or if he's grumpy by nature, maybe she just cheers him up. So is the individual personalities, did you find that in your surveys, that the personalities of the people involved had a big impact on their own reporting of their general happiness?
That's a great point. We didn't have data to look at that, but you're absolutely right. The past studies show that our personality affects not only how we treat our spouse and how we interact with other people, but also our own happiness level. And so people who tend to be high on this trait called neuroticism, they tend to make not only themselves but their partner miserable by being a nitpicker, by not being able to find the positive. Whereas by people who have an agreeable style or an extroverted style tend to be happier, and they also tend to attract social support from other people. And so you're absolutely right. Personality may definitely intervene in here. You know, one issue is that oftentimes people choose a partner whose personality matches their own. And so it's possible that maybe some of these findings might reflect those couples whereby the husbands and wives have very different personality types.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is interesting, though, if I read your study right, that it doesn't work the other way around. In other words, if the wife is positive, that seems to be a greater contributor to marital happiness than the other way around. So if the husband feels happily married and the wife does not, it doesn't have much effect on her overall life satisfaction, where the reverse is true for men, right?
Yes, that's right. I think that's one of the findings that we found interesting. And I think it says a bit about gender, but also about how men and women interact in marriage, again, especially for this generation, that generally speaking, if someone has a problem with the relationship and makes a statement such as, we need to talk about the relationship, overwhelmingly, it's the woman is the one who says, we need to talk about this relationship. Mm-hmm. And so that means that if a woman is happy in her relationship, she might spread compliments to her husband. But likewise, if a woman is unhappy in her marriage, she will articulate that to her husband. Men, by contrast, especially men of this generation, maybe they were raised to roll with it more. But these men, if they're unhappy with their marriage, in many cases, they're not going to say as much. They might just suck it up and take it. They might compartmentalize. So consequently, a man who is unhappy with the marriage might not say anything to his wife, thus rendering her oblivious and not really having an effect on her overall mood. If a wife doesn't know if a husband's happy or not because he's staying silent, she wouldn't necessarily be immune to that, right? She wouldn't know it or feel it or see it.
Yeah, and that's complicated too. I mean, it can be that if a man expresses negative feelings about the marriage to the woman, he may get a much more exaggerated negative response than if a woman expressed negative feelings to the man about it. You know, there, as you say, differences in emotional reactivity and in communication. And so the communications in one direction will get a different response that's harder to deal with maybe than they would in the other direction. So I don't know. You know, all this stuff is so, everybody understands these things to some extent. And the trick of doing a study is to try to parse them out, right, and to delineate, you know, what happens. It's like make a mathematical equation almost out of things that are so variable, right? So
it is a mathematical equation. And I think that's par for the course for any type of social science study that we're going to report on. When we do statistical analyses, we're talking about the average trend in your average married couple of 40 years. This is what you'll find. And you're absolutely right. There will be gradations. What about those couples that are age mismatched? What about those who are on their third marriage? Hmm. What about those that have levels of abuse, for instance? So absolutely, there's always going to be traits that people have that set them apart from the average. And that's perfect springboard for future research on these topics, although this initial study was really about kind of the average American couple that's been married for 40 years.
You're listening to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. We're talking with Dr. Deborah Carr, who is a sociology professor and chair of the Department of Sociology at Rutgers University, New Jersey, about her study on happy marriage, happy life, and really on marital quality and the subjective well-being that people reported in a survey in later life. One thing that was surprising to me was that overall, the men in your study, Debbie, reported slightly more marital happiness than their wives did. Did that surprise you?
It didn't. That's actually one of the most common findings in research on marriage, that men report greater levels of happiness. And in another study, I kind of delve into why that might be. And again, I study older couples. So again, they might be more traditional in how they assign his and her roles. But part of that is because women typically do more for the husband than vice versa. And that's not to say that husbands don't support their wives. But women on average are more likely to listen to the husband, to ask him what's wrong, to help him with his medications, to offer that kind of support. So on average, women do more and give more of the emotional end. And so consequently, that contributes to men's higher levels of happiness and satisfaction in the relationship.
Okay, so in these older couples that were in your study, I guess what you're saying is that being married is an easier job on average for men than it is for women because the women work harder at it than the men do, which may be true. You had mentioned a number of times the older couples that were in your study, and I would call them old married couples. I mean, why don't you describe them just demographically for a second?
Sure. This is a sample of about 360 couples, so about 720 people all together, and they were married on average for about 39 years. They represent the full spectrum of race and ethnicity, social class. Really, it is a typical sample of older adults who have been married for a long time. But we should say that about 28% of them were in a second marriage or a third marriage. And one of the surprising findings that we're fleshing out in another paper is that women in their second marriages are happier than women in their first marriages. And we think it's that maybe they're so pleased to be in a new marriage that worked better than their first, that that helps to elevate their level of marital happiness. But yeah, it's a sample of older couples in their 60s, 70s, and 80s across the whole spectrum of race and social class.
That's interesting. Did men in their second marriages seem to be happier than they were in their first marriages, or were you looking at that?
We weren't looking at within-person change, but we looked at, of those men, which ones are in their first marriage, which are in their second. And for men, we didn't see that being in a remarriage was linked to greater levels of life satisfaction or happiness. Whereas for women, we did find a pretty strong effect that those who were in the second marriage reported greater happiness than their counterparts in a first marriage. And we think, again, some of those explanations might be that women tend to be the ones who choose to end a marriage. If you look at divorce, especially among older couples, 75% of those divorces are initiated by women, which suggests they are unhappy. And so if they leave behind an unhappy relationship and find something newer and better, it's all the more rewarding because it's relative to this base of unhappiness that they had experienced.
It's surprising to me. I would have thought that the great majority of divorces were initiated by men, but maybe in the older, what would otherwise be considered settled marriages, maybe it is women for the reason you said then. But even so, looking at the older couples, where the great majority of them were long-term settled marriages, they're probably not representative of married couples generally, because it's not including couples in their 20s and 30s and 40s. How would it be different, do you think, if you looked at younger, more recently married couples than the findings you got?
In many different ways. And I think if we looked at younger versus older couples, there are two main things we need to focus on. One is just age. The older you are, the longer you've been married, and the marital dynamics are different. If you've managed to stay married for 40 years, it means either you've had a really good marriage that could survive, or alternatively, you are really resilient, you weathered the storms of the marriage, or you've just lowered your expectations. You didn't divorce, and you just kind of suck it up and take it. I think that's something pretty common for older couples. For the younger couples today, if you're unhappy, you're going to get a divorce. There's not a stigma for divorce. It's much more common among the younger couples than it was certainly 30, 40 years ago. So there's that phenomenon going on. But there's also a generational difference in how men and women think about their roles in marriage. As we talked a little bit about earlier, for older couples, they were often raised in a time where women were raised to believe that they should be a wife and mother and that men should work and be strong and silent. Today, all bets are off on gender roles. We're seeing this morphing whereby women can be the primary breadwinner, men can be the house husband. So some of these stark gender divides that we might see in older couples, I think, are being erased and rethought in these younger couples. So if we did the same study in younger couples, I'm not convinced we would find those same one-way findings that we found with these older couples.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so either. And it'd be interesting to see whether their overall marital happiness was higher, because since they get divorced more readily for less reason than older couples would have, let's say, maybe the ones who are unhappy are already filtered out, and the ones who remain married are happier a priori, right? So it could be that, or else just that they expect more out of marriage, and so they're more likely to be unhappy for little reasons. And what would you think, that overall they would be likely to be happier, even if, as you say, they're more likely to be similar in their attitudes, but would they be, in general, higher on the happiness scale, do you think? I know you haven't studied it, probably, but what would your guess be?
It's exactly what you mentioned. On one hand, there's not the problem with, you know, selection bias, as you call it, that basically for these young couples, if they're unhappy, they're getting a divorce. They don't have those pressures to stay married as in the past. And likewise, women have more money and stability today. They can leave a failing marriage where their grandmothers would have been trapped financially. So for that reason, we might expect the marriages to be happier because the bad marriages have essentially died out. But this issue of expectations you raise is a very important one. Younger couples today have much greater expectations for what their spouse should be. And if you look at surveys of young couples today, a very high proportion agrees with the statement my spouse should be my soulmate. You know, there's this expectation today that your spouse should share your hopes and dreams and passions and should be everything to you. Whereas in the past, people were more likely to say, it's important that you marry someone you're compatible with, who's a good provider, who's kind. And today, there's a really tall bill that couples are trying to fulfill. It's very hard to be someone's everything. And so I suspect for that reason, younger couples are actually a bit more critical of their marriage just because they set the bar so high for what they thought their marriages were going to be like.
Kind of the epitome of that was the old sitcom Seinfeld. No one there was married because their expectations were so absurdly high that the first tiny little inkling of anything negative, and boom, they were gone. You know?
Exactly. A woman who had man hands or who was a close talker, that would ding her from the marriage pool. And I think, you know, they kind of did it over the top, but they got the point right, that men and women today, they don't have to get married, right? They can have sex outside of marriage. Hmm. They can have children outside of marriage. So they don't have to marry to get all the benefits of it. So they feel they can be much choosier. They only marry when they find the perfect person. Until then, they can have sexual relationships with the various people who pass through their lives.
I think another factor is that younger people have less to lose through divorce. If you've been married for 30 years and you're nearing retirement, divorce financially is a pretty rocky prospect. Whereas if you're 28 and you're making a fairly low salary and you don't own your own home, you don't own much, then, you know, people get divorced and they argue about who's splitting up their frequent flyer miles and things like that. So it's a more trivial prospect in that way, right?
Absolutely. Before you have children, before you own joint property, and before you have the whole extended social network involved. I mean, for older adults, certainly it's resources that one has. It's home ownership, but also the children. It'll upset the children. If one partner remarries, what does that mean for inheritance? There's just a whole collection of difficulties that arise with long married couples. And there's also this notion that you build up marital capital, just as you build up financial capital when you've been working a job a long time. And after 30 or 40 years, your lives are wholly intertwined. You'll have to start kind of from square zero to rebuild. Whereas younger couples who haven't been married so long don't have as much built up in the marriage. There is less to lose, both emotionally and economically.
You are listening to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis, and we're talking with Dr. Deborah Carr, a sociology professor at Rutgers University, about her study around the general premise of happy wife, happy life. So the article I read on Yahoo News about this study got a huge number of comments, I think over 1,200 comments. Many were men, and as I said at the beginning, some were even women, who objected to essentially the basic unfairness of the idea that one person's happiness controlled the happiness of both. It was expressed in general as these wives are like spoiled children who have to be pampered or they throw a tantrum and everybody has to appease them somehow. One typical comment said, I'm so sick of hearing this happy wife, happy life line. If the husband is unhappy, it's his problem, but let the wife be unhappy and the whole world has to suffer. This should be the same for both sexes. Both sides should be concerned about the other's happiness. And a similar one from someone with the handle Abraxas was, it takes two to make a relationship work, but only one to ruin it. This study is pushing the idea that guys are responsible when their wives are not happy. But the reality is, guys can't do anything to change the mood of a woman. Only she can change her mood or outlook on life. Almost half the comments were along that line of, why is it a one-way street? So comment on that.
Yeah, as researchers, we're not telling people the way things should be. We're just documenting what is. We have no agenda there. And people will read into it those things that they're sensitive about. Hmm. We're not saying in any way that men should be responsible for the emotional climate of the marriage. We're just documenting what is. And if anything, I think our findings can be instructive for both partners in a marriage who are interested in maintaining a happy marriage. I think some of our main themes are that both partners need to communicate if they're happy or unhappy. If a woman doesn't know her husband's unhappy, she might not make any changes, and vice versa. So our main takeaway message is that, you know, it's important for husbands and wives to say when they're happy because that feels really good for the other partner. Sometimes we forget to praise our partners and highlight those things we're happy about. But likewise, if we're unhappy about something, if we're silent, it'll sit and fester. And so we really emphasize the point that both need to talk about their levels of happiness, because you cannot have a marriage really succeed if one partner is miserable and the other isn't.
Yeah, so ideally, as you say, the main takeaway lesson is that couples should communicate, but I suspect that those who are inclined to communicate already do, and those who are not don't, and only maybe a little marital counseling or things like that will change that a little bit around the edges, but for the most part, in long-term marriages and relationships, those things are settled and set in concrete, and they're not going to communicate much more than they ever have, or if they do about negative things. Also, it can kind of take the lid off of those things and destabilize situations that have become stable even if they're unhealthy, you know? So what do you think about that, that communication can potentially be a destabilizing or bad thing?
I think it can be a destabilizing thing. Whether it's bad is another question. I mean, obviously, couples build their own repertoire. And if your repertoire is sweeping bad things under the rug, and by not acknowledging it, everybody's happy and that works for you, yeah, sure, why not continue it? But especially for older couples, challenges are going to come where honesty is needed. One is when you start thinking about nursing home care and inheritance and who you want to be your caregiver when you're dying. These are really hard issues that older couples have to talk about, and they are uncomfortable. And if not, bad things are going to erupt to the surface somehow, especially when people have health problems and one develops dementia. The marriage becomes just a pressure cooker. And so all these lurking problems might really come to a head. Mm. So I understand that sometimes letting sleeping dogs lie feels better in the short term. But in many cases, that approach might lead to a really unpleasant explosion. So by taking control proactively, maybe discussing things before the you-know-what hits the fan might actually be good for these couples, even if it's uncomfortable in the short term, which it certainly will be if you're putting a wrench into the way you've been doing your marriage for so many years.
Mm-hmm. So what can younger couples do, apart from the communication we're talking about, but are there other little, let's call them tricks, that younger couples can do in their relationship to not end up as unhappy older couples sitting in a restaurant staring at their plate and not speaking during the entire meal, you know, that kind of thing that you see sometimes?
Exactly, yeah, reading the newspaper. You know, I think one is really, even if you're not someone who's like, we need to talk, I think, you know, one piece of advice is just let the other know each day, like one thing that they did to make the other happy. And the other is to encourage each other to, if something really is bothering them, to talk about it and recognize that in the short term it's going to sting, but in the longer term it could have positive consequences. What you don't want is one partner to feel that they are always making the sacrifice for the other, because at some point the one giving too much is going to feel frustrated and angry and unappreciated, and the one who takes too much, at some point that free riding is going to lead to a lot of guilt. And so I think whatever a couple can do really to try to maintain a quality in the give and take, and to recognize that things are cyclical. There are going to be years of that marriage where one partner does much more than the other, but it will even out. Maybe when the kid reaches a certain age or when one's new business takes off, things will equal out at some point. And so that knowledge might help to lessen the sting during those time periods when one feels that it's really imbalanced. You know, in a good marriage, it should correct, but not magically. It requires that communication.
Well, I'm going to end by repeating the comment from someone named Aaron, who said something simple, but he said, in the end, it's nobody's job to make you happy but yourself. And that's true to a great extent, although your partner can help with that quite a bit if they're willing and able. And so I want to thank you, Dr. Deborah Carr, for being on with us in American Variety. This is interesting, and we could probably talk another hour about this topic if we wanted to, but we've got to leave it there. And thanks again for being on.
Oh, thank you for inviting me on. I really enjoyed this.
Thanks to all of you for listening. I hope you'll tune in again next week, same time, same place, for more American Variety Radio.